Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The death of musician Glen Campbell this week has many South Dakotans talking about Alzheimer's. Campbell waged a public battle against the disease. He wanted his fans to know his story in case he seemed disoriented on stage during a performance. The 2014 film Glen Campbell, I'll Be Me documented his journey further and made the singer one of Alzheimer's most well-known patients. Leslie Morrow is the state director for the Alzheimer's Association. What are your questions about Alzheimer's? How has it impacted your life, the lives of your neighbors? Send me an email, inthemoment@sdpb.org, or you can text me at 605-956-SDPB, and we'll share your story on the air with Leslie here. Again, that's inthemoment@sdpb.org, or text 605-956-SDPB. Leslie, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
A story like the death of Glen Campbell, is that an opportunity to really raise awareness once again? Are more people thinking about it, talking about it, asking questions about Alzheimer's?
You know, it truly was. His entire journey really put the disease in the spotlight. You mentioned the documentary when I'll Be Me came out, and we had showings here in Sioux Falls. And I vividly remember getting more calls from people. It's like there's still a stigma attached to the disease, unfortunately. And I think once when that generation and folks of any generation see someone as popular and beloved as Glen Campbell was, being able to kind of let us see behind the curtain, see that it's okay to share that with folks, they felt it was okay for them too. And they reached out for help, and we were very grateful for that. And we owe a debt of gratitude to Glen Campbell and his family for what they did for this disease.
Where does the stigma come from? In your experience, after seeing what people struggle with and the questions they ask, why is stigma still?
You know, I think I'll take cancer, for instance. You know, I think everyone sees cancer as you can't help it. You just get it. And the same, it's the exact same truth for right. Alzheimer's or related dementia. It's a brain disease. You have no control over what happens. But I think the behaviors that come along with that disease, because mom suddenly seems so different than she used to be and does inappropriate things, so to speak, I think that's hard for families. And there's a sense sometimes to keep it hidden away. And that's really unfortunate, because you certainly wouldn't say that to someone who isn't able to carry out the same activities they did if they had another kind of disease that we hear about every day. And so right. we're constantly working with that. I think, unfortunately, a growing number of people being diagnosed with younger onset Alzheimer's, meaning they get that diagnosis before the age of 65, has also shown a light on this disease, because those folks don't want to just sit at home. They want to be active. They want to learn about what they have. They want to be in touch with others who are walking that same road, and to frankly, open minds about it. So that's been very beneficial as well, even though it's unfortunate that we see younger and younger people being diagnosed with this disease.
And I'm sure there's a sense, too, that in the cancer journey, you might get better. So there's, you know, you might say, this is the chemotherapy, this is the radiation. Look at, you know, my mom, she's fighting so hard. If my mom has Alzheimer's,
we know what the end is going to look like.
We know what the end is going to look like. Right. So how do you sort of process that? That has to play in somewhat.
It definitely plays in when we encourage people to get an early diagnosis. That we have lots of folks that say, why would I want to know? There's nothing mm-hmm. you can do for me anyway. And, you know, we really advocate for early diagnosis and the planning that goes along with that. We know that there is great peace for those folks who are able to sit down with their families, talk about what might lie ahead, and have a say. This is what I want. When I go into long-term care, if I don't stay at home, this is what I'd like. And it helps the families. It helps the person with the disease. There are also elements of, you know, we'd been wanting to take that trip to Europe. We're going to take it this year. We're not right. going to wait another year. And those are all reasons that we believe it's important to get a diagnosis. Even if right now we don't have a cure for the disease, you still have elements of it that you can take control of.
All right. When do you know, and how do you get a diagnosis? When do you know it's time for you or your loved one to say, it's time for a screening?
Sure. It's tricky for people, because I think we all know as we get older, there are things maybe we could remember easier than we can now. What we say really is a benchmark. If it impacts your daily life, if you are noticing a change in your daily life that changes how you have to do things, that's the time to go talk to your doctor. And the bottom line is those changes might be a result of some memory loss, but it could be a variety of other things as well that you want to have looked at. You want to make sure you rule them out. And that's really where the process begins. So I always use the example, you know, if someone was always really good at remembering names and suddenly They can't remember the names of their very dearest loved ones. Of course, that's a significant change that you'd want to go talk to your doctor about. However, if folks have never been good at remembering names and now they see that it's a little bit worse, or that might not be cause for alarm. But you will know if there's a recipe that you always knew and suddenly you can't put that together anymore, that's a change that you'd want to talk to your doctor about and then go from there.
I haven't been able to find my car keys since 1988, so
probably
I'm not
a reason, Lori.
Yes. Yeah. Right. What's the screening like?
Well, you know, it depends on if you go to see your primary physician first. They might do a mini cognitive exam in there that would maybe tip them off to something bigger going on. And they then might refer to a neurologist. And those, if it kind of escalates as you go, but those tests for memory do tend to be quite long, and maybe 2 hours or so, because they want to be really thorough. They want to see what's going on. An MRI might be recommended as well to see if there's any changes in the brain and also to rule out tumors or lesions or anything like that. So it varies from person to person. What we really advocate for is if you feel that there's something going on, and for instance, the doctor that you are seeing maybe doesn't agree necessarily that there is something, but if in your gut you feel like there is, continue to pursue that. Even if it means perhaps changing physicians or going for a second opinion, you deserve the answers that to the questions that you're asking. And if that means going to see a few and going up to a neurologist, then so be it.
What are some of the basic warning signs? You said get checked out if it's affecting your life. What, people think of memory loss, forgetting names. Are there other signs?
You know, sometimes changes in depth perception. A lot of times that exhibits itself in driving. Suddenly driving becomes an issue because you can't see how close something is, or reaction time has slowed down. Even in walking, let's say you walk from a vinyl surface onto carpet, and that change in how that looks for some folks that have the disease maybe looks like there's the darker color is a step, and then they get confused. Is at the same level? Things like that, that maybe change. You know, any changes in personality, significant changes, sudden irritability, also withdrawing from your day-to-day activities. If you always love to golf and suddenly they have no desire to do that, sometimes it can be contributed to not being able to follow the game anymore. They're really struggling to do those things. Again, withdrawing from conversations. If they can't seem to follow that, they might just sit back a little bit. You know, those are some pretty significant changes that I think would be hard to miss.
Tell me what your organization does within the state of South Dakota. What sort of resources and support do you provide?
You know, we are really here for families throughout the entire journey. For the person living with the disease, we offer counseling, one-on-one counseling. We bring in entire families to help them get on the same page as far as care. Of course, we're here for the caregiver. We know that they often take the brunt of this disease as well. So we offer support groups for them around the state, as well as information and referral, getting them connected to other resources throughout our state that could be helpful in this journey as well. We also now have an early stage support group for those that are in the early stages, not necessarily younger onset, but they could be at any age but have just been diagnosed, that has really been helpful for them to help them meet with others who have also just been diagnosed, to let them, they meet with their care partners. So it's the person living with and their care partner who are all together, and they really have formed a close-knit group. That becomes a closed group where they meet for a certain set of weeks. And we've really seen great comfort and camaraderie among those folks that are in that circle too.
Are you statewide? Are you regional?
We cover all 66 counties. All of our services are provided at no cost. Generally, anyone who reaches out to us for the first time, we send out a big information packet, about 25 brochures in there that cover all kinds of things from driving, the basics of the disease, financial planning, all kinds of stuff in there that is just, it's a wealth of information, really. Sometimes people say they come back in and they have their folder that we sent out and it's all ratty and torn at the edges, and we love to see that. And they say, we refer back to that. As things change in our lives, we go back to those brochures and see which one is appropriate right now. And we have books sometimes that we send out, just a lot of good information. One other note, you know, we do hit all 66 counties, but we know how geographically set apart our state is. And so we have a really useful resource called our 24/7 helpline. It is based out of our home office in Chicago, and it is staffed by often master's level social workers. And again, like it says, they are available anytime. While our office is open during the day, we know crisis sometimes happens at 3 in the morning, and it is an awesome resource for people that are, you know, struggling with a behavior. Even professional caregivers, folks that work in nursing homes, have called and want to know how to deal with a specific behavior or how to help this person the best they can. So I will throw that number out there as well, which is 800-272-3900. That's 800-272-3900. And you know, I even one night had a trooper call me who he called our office and left a message who had pulled someone over who he believed had dementia, wasn't sure where to turn. We helped him as best we could locally, but then also I checked with that 800 number just to make sure if we ever had something like that come up again. And they said, you know, we have troopers call us all the time because they, you know, are in the middle of the night and something happens. So it's just, it's really a great resource all the way around.
Research, where are we at? How fast is the research moving forward? Is there, do you have a cause for hope?
We definitely do. I think we could all agree it's not going forward as quickly as we'd like to. Okay. You know, this is a disease, while discovered well over 100 years ago, true research on Alzheimer's didn't start until the late 70s, early 80s. So when you think about that, we've come relatively far in a short amount of time. The Alzheimer's Association holds an international conference every year somewhere across the globe. This year it was held in London just last month. And all of the researchers come together and share what they know, which is rare because a lot of times researchers hold that information close to their chest. But they realize the clock is ticking and we need to find an end to this disease. So they're really looking at ways to perhaps bust up the plaque and the tangles that form on the brain. It's kind of a protein that gums it up and keeps our synapses from firing the way they should. So they're looking at that. But we're really looking at prevention and also being able to stop this disease in its tracks before the symptoms ever manifest themselves. So imagine being able to go to your doctor, and if a simple look into your eyes would tell you that this disease is present, but we then had a drug that could keep it from ever manifesting itself, that's what we're ideally shooting for. And I think that's where the research is really going right now as well.
Behavioral or environmental prevention tips, or don't get caught up in that rabbit hole of thinking that this isn't something that you could just prevent by getting a good night's sleep.
We definitely know that that which is good for your heart is also good for your brain. So the stuff that you hear all the time about staying moving, eating a heart-healthy diet, staying socially active, continue to be a lifelong learner, those things can all help. The truth of the matter is, at this time, we cannot prevent this disease. What we know is that those things I mentioned can help reduce your risk of cognitive decline, which then can turn into Alzheimer's disease down the road. So those are great things to think about. And as far as what will crack the code, so to speak, you know, we've heard all kinds of things that could maybe help and decrease, and we get calls all the time. The bottom line on that is that everything's on the table. When you have a disease that has no cure, scientists are looking at synthetic things, they're looking at natural remedies, they are looking at everything to see what could possibly help.
All right, let's close with the walks coming up in September. It's a big month for you. You're certainly welcome to come back in September.
Oh, thank you.
But let's give a quick highlight of some of the walks that are coming up.
Sure. We have three walks across the state in September. The first one is September 16th in Sioux Falls. That one begins. Registration is at 8 a.m. The walk begins at 10 a.m. And we're at a new location this year. It's at 8th and Railroad, right downtown.
Nice.
Our walk is going to wind around Falls Park. And so we are expecting a beautiful turnout. More than 1,000 people last year. We outgrew our previous location at Sertoma Park, which is a good problem to have, I guess. And so we are excited for that new location. Again, that's September 16th. Registration is at 8 a.m. If you want to get signed up, ALZ like Alzheimer's, ALZ like zebra.org is where you can sign up a team. There's no cost to sign up. If you raise $100, you get a free t-shirt that day. The following walk is that next weekend, the 23rd, and that is at in Rapid City at Memorial Park. And then the following weekend after that is on a Friday night, and that is the 29th, and that is in Aberdeen at the Wiley Park area out there. So we are excited for all three of those. You know, they really are our bread and butter. They're what keep our doors open and allow us to serve folks at no cost all year. So we encourage people to check out a walk near you at alz.org, and we would love to see you in September.
Leslie Morrow, State Director for the Alzheimer's Association. Thank you so much. Come back in September. We'll talk again.
Thanks. Thanks for the opportunity.